Hello, the 42 members. You are listening to the Football Family, and my name is Paul Dollery. It's great to have you with us, as always. On today's show, we are looking ahead to the start of Ireland's bid to qualify for the 2023 Women's World Cup. It's a difficult first game, to say the least, for Vera Pauw's side on Thursday night at Tallaght Stadium, where they will face Sweden, who are currently ranked second in the world. We will shortly be bringing you an interview with the Ireland manager, but also with us on this episode are the 42's own Emma Duffy and Gavin Cooney. How are you, folks?
All good, dolls.
Now, before we get stuck into our preview of Thursday's game, it's a very exciting time to be a member of the 42, as it always really is, but especially so at the moment, because our new book, Behind the Lines 5, is now available to buy. It is, as the title indicates, the fifth edition of our sports writing anthology. An anthology so good, Gav, that they even named a podcast after it. But many of you have bought the previous editions, and we love producing them with your support, of course. The new book costs €12, but the good news for members is that you can use your 20% discount to buy it from our online store. That's the 42.shop. You can just enter the code 42MEMBER20. So if you want to get your hands on a copy of Behind the Lines 5, go to the 42.shop and enter the discount code 42MEMBER20 when making your purchase, and you'll get 20% off. Gav, always a great value purchase, really, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I say that as someone who's been featured in it, so acknowledging I'm maybe slightly biased when I say that. No, it's great. Go out and get it. And then obviously, yeah, I have to say that the book did exist before we called the podcast Behind the Lines. So I am guilty of a lack of imagination and creativity there. But that's not missing in the book, so go and get it.
It's a versatile title, in fairness, yeah. Now, Emma, as I mentioned at the top, you've been speaking to Vera Pauw and some of the Ireland players over the last few days. They seem to be a squad who feel that they're in a good place coming into this campaign, which is interesting, I suppose, because up until a month ago, they were on a run of 7 straight defeats, albeit against mostly top-level opposition. I suppose it just goes to show, even though it was only a friendly, the importance of that win over Australia and what it's done for their confidence.
Yeah, absolutely, dolls. Like, there was a big boost, I suppose, in Tallaght Stadium a month ago with that win over Australia. The Matildas, one of the best sides in the world. I suppose everyone knows Sam Kerr and what she was coming to do in Dublin, and Ireland stopped that. So just, it was really positive. There were lots of positives, but I think the thing about this team under Vera Pauw has, like, there hasn't really been consistency, which is quite frustrating because they were quite close to qualifying for the last campaign. I think it will haunt them for quite some time. But look, this is a new chapter. It's a fresh start, and hopefully we can go and qualify for a major tournament, a first ever major tournament. But as you say, the start is a really, really difficult one. It's not ideal, but look, if we can get results between Sweden, I think the big one is Finland though, and I think that's one that the team are certainly targeting, but a really difficult start against Sweden in Tallaght Stadium on Thursday. But you know, I think they're very confident that they can go and do something. I suppose they back the improvements they've made over the last while, so we'll just have to wait and see how Thursday goes.
Yeah, this game sold out last week. 4,000 said to be in attendance at Tallaght Stadium, 50% capacity in use. The government announced earlier today that sports venues can return to full capacity for the first time since the pandemic began, Gav. But unfortunately, that isn't going to have an impact on the attendance for this game, is it?
No, this game is hosted a few hours too early. So it's midnight Friday, the 22nd of October, when everything reverts to full capacity. This game sadly kicks off on Thursday night, so they're restricted to 4,000. Tickets at Tallaght Stadium, which have sold out a while ago. Like, I've heard various anecdotal stories of people wanting to go and not being able to get tickets for it. So it's unfortunate that A, they can't bring the deadline forward a few hours and allow the FAI to sell this out, or B, that the FAI didn't just move it to the Aviva and have restrictions in place there. You know, we could see the Qatar game for the men's game, you could have up to 25,000 there, but that decision wasn't made. I know, I think Connacht are playing a URC game there at the weekend, but bit of a pity, yeah, that they haven't moved to the Aviva to get around the restrictions. And then obviously more of a pity that there's no common sense to bring the restrictions in a few hours earlier than planned so they could fully sell out Tallaght Stadium.
Yeah, great to see the demand, obviously, but quite disappointing that there are going to be a lot of people who would like to attend this game and will have to watch it on TV. One of the big stories leading into the game, Emma, has been the imminent departure of Vera Poe's assistant, Eileen Gleeson. Great news for her, obviously, to get the top job at Glasgow City. It's a huge opportunity and one that she richly deserves. But how much of a blow is that to Ireland? I mean, I don't think it's overstating it to argue that the decision to bring in someone like Vera Poe a couple of years ago probably wouldn't have worked without having someone like Eileen Gleeson providing her knowledge and expertise of the game here.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, she's been a renowned coach in the Women's National League for the past few years, particularly with Piemont and UCD Waves. And then obviously assistant under Vera Powell, she knows Irish women's football inside out. So that was definitely needed with someone like Powell coming in. And obviously she cut her teeth then at the top level. This is a massive opportunity for Eileen. As she said herself, it's quite bittersweet. But look, it's going to be difficult because I suppose there's not that continuity and a little bit of unsettling after the first window, which isn't exactly ideal in a new campaign. But look, I suppose it could be worse. And it is, as you say, a massive opportunity for her going to Glasgow. They're 14 in a row champions. They're going for their 15th title. There's a good Irish contingent over there. Like, but then on the flip side, you look at Ireland and that void is going to have to be filled. Obviously, you know, the squad are focused on the games at hand and I doubt the players will be thinking too much into it, but it is something that will have to be addressed after these two games.
Gav, before we hear from Vera Poe, just to touch on what Ireland are actually pursuing here in this campaign, which is qualification for a major tournament. We've had some really positive developments recently from the pay parity with the men's team, obviously new sponsorship deals with big brands like Sky and Cadbury's. But I guess that the biggest step in the right direction for Irish women's football and the FAI's management of it would be for this team to really put itself in the spotlight by qualifying for a World Cup.
It'd be transformative, wouldn't it, to get to a first major tournament? And I think there's a bit of pressure. It's so much harder to get into the World Cup than it is the Euros, obviously. And I think there might be a bit of pressure on Vera Powell to at least come close this time around because they made such a mess of it, the Euros. Like, they should have qualified. You know, there's a lot of, I don't know, I felt a lot of the coverage was a little bit patronising in the sense that it didn't focus on what they did wrong and wasn't critical enough of the team. And you can't be too critical of Pau because you wasn't in charge for the full campaign. But like the really careless draw against Greece and how they managed to lose that game to the Ukraine was ridiculous, you know. And then we saw the Ukraine then knocked out of the playoffs by Northern Ireland. So, like, that's a massive opportunity missed, you know. And you could see even Denise O'Sullivan's body language after the Ukraine game. She knew that was a big, big opportunity missed. So, yeah, look, it'd be totally transformative. To get through this group will be very, very difficult. You know, they won't finish ahead of Sweden, so they're battling with Finland for second place. Now, Finland are only a few places above Ireland in the world ranking, so they should be within sight, but it's such a complex system. Like, there will be 9 runners-up across the groups, but only 3 of them can qualify via the playoffs, and one of those 3 has to go to an additional playoff against another side from another continent, from another confederation across FIFA's system. So it'll be difficult. Big opportunity missed the last time, but it will be so transformative, you know. And there is a lot of momentum, a lot of positive momentum behind this team. And in fairness to the FAI, have been very good in driving it. It began with the players at Liberty Hall a few years ago, but the new FAI management have upheld their end of the bargain by hiring Pau and giving her most of seemingly what she has asked for in terms of architecture behind the scenes, in terms of the pay parity, in terms of getting a few WNL games on TG Cahir, and in terms of sponsorship and so on. So now is time to deliver.
Yeah. And even though it is, as you said, Gav, a very difficult group containing 2 teams who will be at the Euros next year, Emma, I don't think I'm being unfair by saying, as Gav was mentioning there, that this Ireland team will be disappointed if they don't make it into a playoff. Okay, you'd expect Sweden to top the group, but Finland are the kind of side that Ireland will be aspiring to compete with. And to that end, given how costly those results away to Greece and Ukraine were in the last campaign, the margin for error this time, you'd imagine, will be very, very
absolutely
small.
Absolutely. And Dolls, a result is needed in Helsinki next week. There's no two ways about it. Like, we can't just leave there with nothing. We can't leave there empty handed. They need to lay down a marker over there. And as we know, getting points against the second seeds is exactly how you get into that second spot and hopefully make a playoff. But just to touch on what Gav was saying there, the fact that we've never reached a major tournament, the momentum behind women's football at the minute, qualifying for something like a World Cup is exactly what we need. It's exactly what women's football in Ireland needs. We see obviously success, and like even just thinking back to my own memories of the Irish men's team, I don't know if I'm going to come across a little bit young here, but my first memories are of the 2002 World Cup. And, you know, it didn't matter how the team got there. You just remember the tournament. You remember the hype around the team. You remember vans painted green, white and gold going around the town. You remember the TV being wheeled out in school to watch the matches. And that's what we need for this Irish women's team. And without qualification, we won't get that. So it's exactly what women's football here needs, qualification for a major tournament immediately, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, so Thursday's meeting with Sweden will be game number 13 for Vera Poe since she took over as Ireland manager in the autumn of 2019. Emma ventured out to Abbottstown to have a chat with her ahead of this one, and here's what she had to say.
So Vera, thanks so much for joining us today. A new campaign, another bid to reach a first ever major tournament for Ireland in the 2023 World Cup. I'd imagine you're just really looking forward to getting started in front of a sold out Tallaght Stadium on Thursday.
Yeah, it's amazing. We unfortunately, but with all respect for all the restrictions, but unfortunately we cannot fill it completely because of the COVID restrictions, but the sold out, which is already so far before the game, is fantastic, and it shows the enthusiasm that everybody has for our team. And I think the players deserve that because they emit such a positivism, sorry, it's a difficult word for me, I think that can only help us, especially when all the kids are shouting as loud as they can on the difficult moments. So I would encourage them to do that because it really helps us. It fills our heart with energy, and you can see it also on the play that it just pulls us over some difficult moments.
Exactly, and we saw that against Australia the last time out, fans returning. How much of a boost was that win? Because obviously there had been a difficult run of results beforehand, albeit against higher ranked sides. But just to get a win like that against the Matildas, it was huge.
It was huge, and especially because we also won the scrimmage. We played 3x25 minutes a few days earlier, with completely open, with all the subs that we wanted, and so very, very much a training game. But we also won that one, and it gives us the confidence. We had the confidence that we were on the right track, but it boosts our morale in the process that we are going through. We needed it. We really needed it. And but it is not that we ever hesitated about the path that we were on, because every single game we were playing better, and we deliberately chose the opponents that we chose, and we deliberately knew that we would have several defeats in a row. So having this moment that it turns around, we were waiting on the moment that the luck would fall our way, because let's be honest, we also had a bit of luck. But you force that. Before it would fall the other side, and now it falls our side. And that means that we went through a phase of maybe by time some frustration, because again, we lost because of an own mistake. But the key difference was that we did not make fouls. We made 4 fouls in the whole game, if I'm correct, of which the first two were ridiculous. We did everything right. So that means that the game cannot be taken over by your opponent. And that is so hugely important. Next to that, I think you have to play the game within the rules. We are playing very intense, so we do not compromise on that, but you can play very intense without making fouls, and you can press 100% at the highest level without making fouls, and we start to learn that. And I think that has been the biggest win of the last game.
Of course, and that's going to be hugely important now going into the next window. And make no qualms about it, Vera, we know how tough this is going to be, and it's a really difficult start against the top two seeds in Sweden and Finland. Maybe just for our listeners, explain how good they are and where we'll need to target them.
Yeah, it was not our choice, of course, to have them. UEFA made a draw because we couldn't find an agreement of our games. And that was because Sweden and Finland had decided amongst themselves to pick up the last games of the last two slots against each other, which is completely unfair play. And we did not accept that. And after hours and hours of negotiation, we did not accept it. So UEFA has made a draw with the outcome that we now start with it, but with a much more balanced and fair play for all the teams involved. So I want to highlight that that first. And then starting against Sweden, yeah, you can also say, let's start with the toughest. So from there, you can build on what you need to do. Instead of last campaign that we had easy games first, or easy, not easy, but we could win first. And then having Germany twice at the end of the campaign with all the negative results, because now everybody thought that we were going down, instead of that the people who really were following us saw that every game we were getting better. And now, if you have those tough games behind you, how would you say that? If you've gone through them, then you can plan the rest.
Exactly. And Vera, we were speaking in the press conference just about the club form of your players coming into this window. Like, Katie McCabe has been phenomenal at Arsenal. Leanne Kiernan has been banging in goals for Liverpool for fun. In particular, I suppose, that must be very, very pleasing, you know, to have these players in good places coming into this.
Yeah, exactly. The competition is getting huge, and that's a good thing. It also gives a lot of sleepless nights because I'm very much aware of the position that I am in. Who are you playing? Who are in the stands? Everybody's working so hard to improve. Everybody is sacrificing as much as the other. And then you have to make choices between players who are improving, but others are better. And that's a huge task. It's a good thing to be part of it, because that also means that we have alternatives for injuries, but also when the game is not going our way. And we'll see how it goes. We have a plan, of course. But it's fantastic to see how players are growing within their clubs. And Katie, I would like to say that I've got huge respect for the role that she has, because in Arsenal, there's world-class players around her. I'm not saying that we don't have, because we also have very talented players, but everybody knows that the likes of Miedema or Kim Little, or that's just phenomenal to play with them. So she has a different role there, and she can flourish and shine amongst those players, and she's part of those best players. But in her role, she's serving those world-class players. With us, she's not only serving our players, but she also has to make it, and she has to score, and she feels that she needs to do it all. It's a complete different role, and it's very difficult for her, because she needs to identify that sometimes she needs to restrict herself to have a bigger impact in the positive result in our team than what she would like to do, because she wants to do more. And we also feel that she can do more than what she's doing. But still, we need her there at this moment. And that is, of course, constant in discussion with her. And we've tried her last to put her further up front, but that didn't work, because then she wasn't served. So she's the one who's serving others. And that is her first quality. And if she can get those shots out or those crosses out, and that we can excel by that, then we are very, very happy. And she knows that. But it's a difficult position that she's in. She's still a young player. And it's very difficult to distinguish those different roles, that she has to jump from one to the other all the time and then back.
Yeah, I think a lot
I've
of us
got huge respect for the way she's doing it.
A lot of us forget that she's still only 25, 26, and I don't know if people realise just how big of a talent she is, like, that we have in Ireland, in Katie and in Denise and in so many other players too.
So many others, because she's shining in the Champions League and in Arsenal, but there's others shining also. Players in America. Don't forget, for example, Heather Payne. She's a bit hidden in that college system. And I wanted that the time would move on a bit, because she will shine also. And there's more players. Look at Avian Clancy coming in now. Look at Ellen Molloy, how she's developing.
Yeah, so Vera, 2 years as Ireland Women's National Manager now. How do you reflect on it all? I suppose it's been a bit of a whirlwind from that first game against Ukraine, through the COVID pandemic, through the end of the last campaign, positive developments through the summer off the field in terms of pay parity and the Sky deal and plenty of other things. Just how do you kind of reflect on it all now and obviously looking forward as well?
I can hardly believe it's already 2 years. And that is probably also because of the COVID situation, because it's been weird. But I think that if I look around me, and I said it in the press conference also, we are the only team that grew under the pandemic. And that's a huge compliment for everybody involved, for the players, for the staff, for the program, the process. And you can only get something like this when there's a huge of hard work of all involved. And hard work at the end pays off. But by times, of course, everybody had the feeling, yeah, what are we doing now? And for me, it was, when do I stay away and when do I intensify it? Because it did not make any sense, in my opinion, to put all like of assignments or whatever. That's what many coaches did. The players had to do assignments in the during COVID. And I thought they've got their minds are full of how to cope with this situation. So if I now put pressure on them, that doesn't work. But at what moment can I help them? And individually, I've done a lot in that. But only if they needed it. And when we would be able to play then we intensified it very much in a few days. That has been my choice, and I think it's been a good choice, because then the players can really focus on that one thing, and they actually became hungry to get into camp, to finally see each other, to finally make that next step, which made them concentrating on such a high level when we were in camp. And don't think that we were busy from early morning and the night, and they were very short moments every time, but the moments that we were working, 100% attention and concentration and energy, and huge compliments, because that's really demanding, but everybody has bought into it, and I think that's been a success in the way that we did, because every single game we got better, even if bench players were playing or new players coming in, or I think that the whole game is lifting. Because also at the clubs, the coaches did everything they could to get through this momentum and to grow also from their side. So I think that the whole game maybe even benefited of the situation, because the concentration was so high and the willingness to make something of it was so high. And I'm proud of that. I'm really proud of that.
I suppose qualification obviously is the big thing at the end of this. It's what we're all striving towards, but there have been so many positive strides made. You know, you speak in interviews about the ceiling, and we still don't know where that ceiling is. No. And if we have reached it or when we will reach it.
Yeah.
But you guys have a goal, you guys have a plan, you're on this journey.
Yeah.
And I'd imagine you're pretty happy with where you are at the minute and looking forward to the future.
Yeah, and this process in itself is success. We do everything to qualify. We do everything to qualify. But nobody takes away this process. And nobody takes away the growth of the players individually and collectively. Nobody takes away the growth of the whole game, of the intensity of the game, also at club level. Those coaches are working, can I say the butt off?
Yeah, absolutely.
Every single day to get things better for their players. And what I notice, because the energy is at such a high level, players want to become better. And if they're not sure, they immediately get on our knocking on our door, figuratively or even literally, to discuss it, to have video sessions, to come to look into the fact, to discuss the system, to discuss the team organization. And players, the moment that they feel unsure, they want to change something. So they're not leaning backwards and consuming what's coming to them. They're really part of this process. And that is so different than many other teams. And because they're part of this process and they're willing to open and they're willing to be there also for the kids, but especially for the football, and they're willing to grow, they're willing to become a mature international top star, and putting all the energy in it and all the sacrifice that they have to do it, including keeping us on our tiptoes, I think that that is the core of the success of this team. And what I just said is that process, nobody takes that away from us, whether we qualify or not. But top sports is about qualifying, and our heart is into qualifying. And we have our plans, and step by step we're growing to it. And we are really convinced that we can qualify. If we qualify, it's football, it's sport. You don't know. If you could do that with a signature, we would do it. But you have to play for it. And as an opponent with the same intentions. But the process is something that nobody takes away from us. And I believe that all the positive vibes, like the Sky deal, like the equal pay deal, like the charter, like having a second physio in now, because our physiotherapist is pregnant, and because taking care of the health of the staff, also not only of the players but also of the staff, those things coming in that gives a boost and energy that brings us to heights indeed that we don't know where that will end. We don't know where that ceiling is, and just this team is breaking barriers all the time.
And the journey continues on Thursday at Tala Stadium.
Against only the second place in the world ranking, finalists of the Olympic Games, and we go for it. We have no fear of failure.
It's a perfect way to round it off, Vera. Thanks so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You're listening to the Football Family Podcast on the 42 with myself, Paul Dollery. Also here are Gavin Cooney and Emma Duffy, who you just heard putting the questions to Vera Poe. Emma, some interesting stuff there from the Ireland manager, but let's focus in on the point she was making about her captain, Katie McCabe. Probably in the best form of her career at the moment, I think it's fair to say, with Arsenal. I mean, the fact that she's standing out in a team that also contains players like Vivian Miedema, Kim Little, Tobin Heath, it puts in perspective just how talented she is. She's obviously a huge asset to Vera Poe, but also at the same time, a bit of a conundrum in terms of her position and where Ireland can get the best out of her.
Yeah, that's the big thing. And that's been quite the debate this week. It's obviously going to have a huge influence on the game on Thursday and how Ireland are going to get on. But just to touch on how she's been at Arsenal, just phenomenal. You know, to be winning player of the match on Sky Sports, to be scoring those wonder goals, viral goals, and popping up with assists. And as you say, in that triangle with Miedema and Tobin Heath, I suppose, you know, I don't know if people really realise just how good she is. Like, she is a genuinely world-class player, and we don't have many of those in Ireland, but Katie McCabe certainly is one. But yeah, just the conundrum around her positioning. I suppose under Joe Montemurro at Arsenal, she's developed just into a world-class left-sided player. She can play anywhere down that left flank, but he played her more so left back, and now she's kind of being utilised at left wing back under Jonas Edevold, their new manager. She's playing a lot higher up the pitch, and I suppose with Ireland, she's probably been played mostly at left back recently. She's been moved around quite a lot, but I think the thing is, you know, she's turned into a fantastic defender as well as an attacking player, but we really need her closer to goal because she's a genuine goal threat. We don't have a whole pile of them, but McCabe certainly is one. And even just serving other players with assists and the likes, I do think we need to play her closer to goal. But can we do that against Sweden? That's the big question. I'd imagine we'll see her along that back five again.
What's your take on this, Gav? I suppose if this is going to be a successful campaign for Ireland, getting Katie McCabe on the ball in the right areas will surely be key to that.
Yeah, I'd agree with Emma. I think if Ireland are going to score goals, so they need to get Katie McCabe further up the pitch. And it sounds very much like she'll be effectively left back here against Sweden. But no, I think she needs to get further up the pitch. She'll just kind of help us keep the ball, you know, like otherwise it'll just be a case of clear the ball right back to Sweden and we'll be hemmed into the penalty area for most of the game. And that won't work. Like Sweden will wear you down. Like Georgia did that and they got away with a 4-0 defeat, which was respectable by their standards. Sweden had 45 shots in the game. 45. Like, I mean, their XG was nearly 10. So Ireland needs to keep the ball. And they've looked better with McCabe further up the pitch. Like they had a bit of a shocker against Iceland when they were 3-0 down at half time. And then Pau changed it and put McCabe to the left of the front three. Al Ireland looked a bit better, and she linked up well with I think Ava O'Mahony went to left wing back and linked up well, and where, you know, she, and it helped create the first goal early in the second half, where McCabe dropped off into space, and, you know, took the ball and on the half turn gave it to O'Mahony, and O'Mahony's cross was turned in by Heather Payne, and she just gives a better chance of Ireland keeping possession and gives a better chance of scoring. And like, she can score from distance. I mean, Ireland take a lot of shots from long range, really, like more than you'd expect. And McCabe's got a serious shot on her, nearly scored one against Australia in Tala. So get her closer to goal for those efforts. But it sounds very much like she will be pretty much left back against Sweden. What are the alternative options? I guess Ava O'Mahony could play there. I think Jamie Finn, Emma, might have played there a little bit under Powell this year. I know there's probably a lack of depth and a lack of alternative options there, but I really think that I know you might think that the pragmatic call is to put McCabe defensively against that Sweden team, but I disagree. I think she needs to be further up the pitch and give Ireland a better chance of retaining possession and give Sweden a little bit more to worry about.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Ava O'Mahony, Gav, because as you know, at this stage, I always like to further the case of my fellow Corkonians on this podcast. So I'm definitely in favour of putting Ava O'Mahony in left back and then push Katie McCabe up the pitch. But trying to predict a Vera Pauw starting lineup actually is like trying to pick the lotto numbers, Emma. So we'll probably avoid that. But one selection that will also be very interesting will be the goalkeeper. We've seen Grace Maloney and Courtney Brosnan both starting games over the last year or so. Are we getting any indication yet as to who might get the nod on Thursday? And how important do you think it is that Vera Pauw actually settles on a number one?
Yeah, I think in recent weeks, Vera has kind of hinted that Courtney Brosnan is her number one. She's her first choice keeper, which is a little bit puzzling to me, to be honest. Even just down to the fact that she's not playing regularly with her club. She's second choice at Everton to Sandy McIver. She only made her debut last week against Man City in the Continental Cup, ended up losing 5-1. Obviously difficult playing against City. Grace Maloney then at Reading, she's long established as their number one. It looked like Maloney might have been first choice a few months back, but I think it appears that Brosnan has kind of took the mantle. I'm not too sure about it. Like, she's looked a little bit shaky at times with Ireland, has had a few errors. But then the one thing about her game that is really positive is her distribution. Maloney, likewise, she's very confident and assured in distributing and getting the game restarted pretty quickly. So I'm not too sure. I think we'll probably see Courtney Brosnan between the posts this week. The other goalies in the setup, Eve Badana and Amanda Budden, both playing in the Women's National League. Obviously, Brosnan and Maloney over in England. So there is probably that little bit more to them in that sense, that Vera likes to favour players playing abroad. And then obviously Marie Hurahan, who was first choice a few years back, she seems to be completely gone from the setup, but it's looking like it will be Brosnan. I'm not sure if it's the right option, but we'll see how it goes.
There's been so much chopping and changing with the goalkeeper. Like, it really seems like, you know, seven, you know, all these friendly games against top international sides is an opportunity. And I know Vera Pauw would say it like that. You know, they deliberately took games against high quality opposition to kind of get themselves ready for stiffer tests to come and improve. But the fact that she chopped and changed the goalkeeper so much actually reflected quite poorly on her after a while. It looked more like indecision as much as anything else. I mean, Brosnan started the Australia game, having started the second of the Iceland games. I think that's the only time this year that the goalkeeper hasn't changed from game to game. But like, she hasn't, I really can't understand. Not like Grace Maloney hasn't been perfect, you know, for Ireland. She wasn't, you know, I think she played against Denmark and the goal Ireland conceded was quite soft. But like, Courtney Brosnan has made several high profile errors leading directly to goals in these games so far. Most recently against Australia, led a very tame shot in from distance. I think that was the first Aussie goal. And the fact that she's not playing regularly in England and Grace Maloney is, makes me I do wonder about that decision. Like, I'm not sure. I can't understand. Maybe there's obviously a training ground reason or behind the scenes reason for it. But, and you know, Courtney Brosnan made that terrible error in Ukraine as well, you know. So she hasn't, we have lots of chances and she hasn't really impressed. And I know Grace Maloney hasn't impressed too much either, but she's got the better record and she's playing more regularly in the WSL. So that's a big decision. And I don't know, I'm not sure if Vera Pauw has got the goalkeeper decision right so far.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you both there. Gav, I mentioned the win over Australia earlier and you spoke about it there as well, and how much of a confidence booster that could be heading into this Sweden game. What else impressed you about Ireland on that occasion?
Yeah, it was just great to win, you know. Like, I mean, it's so, like, it's a difficult game to take, you know. So they, I think it's admirable that they took the game, and obviously admirable that they went and won it. You wouldn't fancy them going into a game against Sweden to open a World Cup qualification group off the back of 8 straight defeats. So it was important to get a win. So you could say the goals were kind of fortunate. Two of them deflected. I think the first might have gone down as an own goal by the Australian keeper, but Vera Powell switched to a back three really for all of this year. She played four at the back right up until the Germany home game that Ireland lost 3-1 at the back end of the qualification campaign, but played fairly well actually in that game, like did better than a lot of people were anticipating. So she's stuck with a back three / back five / back 10, it could be, against Sweden. But they showed some encouraging signs of kind of building attacking play through that system, especially in the first half. And I think it was Nifai, like, strolled through midfield really well, played this terrific pass out wide to Anya Gorman, whose cross was almost headed off the crossbar by an Australian defender. So there's encouraging little patterns of play there. My criticism would be that they just don't do it often enough. You know, a lot of the attack and play comes down to long range shots, which are fairly inefficient means of scoring, and then kind of long balls up the channel for Heather Payne to chase like she's Shane Long. So that's my criticism, is that they don't do that often enough. But there were some encouraging signs in terms of building from the back and getting to grips with that system against Australia. And obviously a major plus point for Ireland is their strength on set pieces, like with Louise Quinn and so on. And Sweden, like if Sweden had their bothers breaking down that Georgia team in last month in that qualifier, and for all their possession and all their shots, they scored a penalty, and then they scored the rest of their three goals off the second phase of set pieces, where Georgia could only half clear their lines and then conceded from the follow-up. So Ireland will need to be strong defensively there, but the fact that they should be fine on set pieces, led by Louise Quinn, should be a note of encouragement for this game. So those two things, and I mean, look, if they can just get Katie McCabe and Denise O'Sullivan involved closer to the opposition penalty area, good things will happen. We talked about McCabe's positioning, and Denise, I know Denise has been kind of playing fairly deep in America for deep in midfield for North Carolina Courage. They always look much better when they push McCabe and O'Sullivan up to almost to the edge of the opposition penalty area. Like, Denise played very well against, especially in the 2-0 defeat to Iceland, in that position. So there have been some encouraging signs definitely over these last couple of months, despite the fact the results have been so poor, and the fact that they got that win against Australia matters more than most, I think.
Yeah, I think if there was a hybrid men's women's World Cup and Ireland had a team of, you know, Katie McCabe delivering set pieces into Shane Duffy and Louise Quinn, we would just be unbeatable. I mean, let's be honest about it. But I feel like we've been avoiding talking about Sweden, which is telling in itself. But you know, kicking off with a game against a team of their caliber, I suppose it's a bit of a double edged sword in that it brings an increased risk of starting the campaign with a defeat, obviously. But on the flip side, it's also an opportunity to lay a great platform if Ireland can get some kind of positive result. Can you sum up how difficult that's going to be?
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult. There's no point, I suppose, shying away from how difficult it's going to be. Vera and the players haven't either. They know exactly what's ahead of them and what they're up against. It could be quite backs at the wall for times. But look, I suppose, just as you said at the start, they're ranked second in the world. They're 2020 Olympic finalists. They were beaten on penalties. Caroline Seger, actually, their captain, who's 36-year-old icon, legend. She's well over 200 caps for Sweden, one of the best known women's footballers in the world. She missed that penalty, but I suppose she hasn't hung up the boots just yet. She wants to get to another major tournament with Sweden and to lead them there. They have world-class players in the best leagues in the world. Their domestic league in Sweden is very, very strong as well. And as Gav said earlier, you know, they have so much attacking intent, 45 shots against Georgia. Like, that just shows they're going to lay siege on the Irish goal, I would imagine. So it is going to be really, really difficult. But look, as all Ireland teams do best, hopefully we can catch them on the break. And hopefully, like, you know, even a 1-0 would be, in my eyes, a positive result and would be a good start, because hopefully then next week they go to Finland and they really kick things off there. But yeah, like, even if you look at the last campaign against Germany, I suppose minimising the damage was was the big thing, and that's probably going to be the thing on Thursday against Sweden. But as we say, we'll see how it goes. It's a monumental task, but it's nothing they haven't done before.
I suppose this Ireland team ultimately isn't going to be judged about how they do against the likes of Sweden, but it would be good, as you say, Emma, to be going to Helsinki for next week's game on the back of at least a good performance, because that Finland game is going to be absolutely crucial, and we will discuss it on Friday's show. We'll be back for another episode on Friday. And just before you finish up, Emma, I suppose, you know, you spoke earlier about the significance of World Cups and what they can mean in the overall scheme of things. We saw in 2019 from the viewing figures on RTE and TG Cahir just how much interest there was in that tournament, and that would obviously be multiplied if there was Irish involvement. So it could be huge exposure for the players in the game. I think there would be just something really wholesome as well about seeing the likes of Louise Quinn, Diane Caldwell, Nia Fahey, Áine Gorman, Denise O'Sullivan finally getting a chance on that stage after so long. And really, as we said already, things like the pay parity and the sponsorship deals, while they are massively important, the missing piece really at this stage is qualification, isn't it?
Yeah, and as we say, it would be absolutely massive. It's not going to be an easy task. The World Cup isn't going to be just as straightforward to qualify for as the Euros, and I suppose that's why the last campaign feels like such a missed opportunity. The fact that it's in England as well, so close to home, it would have been absolutely massive. But as you say, this is a new chapter, a fresh slate. We go again. It would be absolutely massive if they were to qualify. Just, as I say, bring women's football on these shores to the next level. You know, there has been so many positive developments over the past 2 weeks off the field. It's time to deliver on it, I think. And that's the big message this campaign.
Excellent stuff, folks. We're going to leave it there. It's Ireland versus Sweden in Tala on Thursday night in the World Cup qualifiers. The game is sold out, but it will be live on RTE2 with kickoff at 7 p.m. Be sure to keep following our coverage on The 42, and we'll be back, as I said, with another episode of The Football Family on Friday. We'll be reflecting on the Sweden game, as well as looking ahead to Tuesday's match against Finland. Emma Duffy, Gavin Cooney, thanks for your contributions, but thanks especially to you, our members. Your support is always appreciated, and we'll chat to you again soon.